Welcome to Meshe Chochma Parshas Tazria. I guess the Iber Yor that we have this year gives us an opportunity to go a little bit slower and to do Tazria 1 week and Mitzora the next week. So I wanted to pick out a few Meshe Chochmas first on the Parsha. You know, these inyanim that we have in Tazria and Mitzora are not exactly... You know, even if you know Vayikra in general, which certainly I don't claim to do, but you know, the inyanim of Saras and the like, which are mentioned in this week's Parshios, are things that are generally not so familiar to us. So having the Meshe Chochma help us through some of the inyanim, both in terms of the halachas as well as the hashkafa involved, will be helpful. If we have time, here's one piece on the Haftarah for Parshas HaChodesh, which is this week, so we'll try to shtup that in as well. In the beginning of Parshas Tazria, in Perek Yudbeis, which is actually the shortest perek in the entire Chumash, the Torah talks about the karbanos brought by a yoledes, by a woman who has just given birth. Right? If she, so it says Perek Yudbeis pasuk vav, uvim los yemei tahara, at the end of the days of her purity, meaning the dam tahara, the blood that she experiences, doesn't make her tzmeya midin tahara, levein olavas, for the birth of a boy or of a girl, tavi keves ben shnaso la'ola, she should bring a 1-year-old lamb as a carbon ola, as a burnt offering, uven yona osar l'chatos, or a pigeon or a turtle dove, as a carbon chatos, el pesach olamai lakoin, to the entrance to the olamai, the kriva olivnei Hashem v'chiper aleho, and it's brought as a carbon before the Ribbono Shel Olam, zos taras hayoledes lazachar olam hakeva. This is the halacha when a woman gives birth to either a male child or a female child. So the Meshe Chochma on page Reish Yud Dalet, the bottom right hand corner, comments as follows. Ben yonah otar l'chatos. He calls our attention to the following phenomena. Yoledes Ashira Mevia Chatos Of. Isn't it interesting how even a well-to-do Yoledes nonetheless brings a carbon chatos, which is an oaf, which is a bird. Now we know in general birds as carbonos are brought when a person is an ani, when he's unable to afford an animal. A bird, you know, cheaper is a lot cheaper than meat, you know, especially if you have to get a whole animal, right? So b'derech klal, a bird would be brought in the case of someone who is a carbon dalos, it's a carbon which is associated with poverty. Indeed, in the parish of Yoledes itself, in the next couple of psukim, we're going to read about how if the Yoledes, the woman giving birth, is impoverished, she brings two birds, right? That's in Pasuk Ches. Vimlo simsa yado deiseh, if she's unable to bring the lamb as the karbon ola, v'lokcho shtei sorim, right? So then she should take two turtle doves, two pigeons, or shnei b'nei yona, two turtle doves, echo l'ola v'echo l'chatos, one for the ola, one for the chatos, v'chiper ola ha'koin v'tahera, and the koin brings them as the karbon. Right? Or in general, when a person brings the karbon ola v'yore, so if they're impoverished, they bring ofos. But here, the rich woman, or the woman who can afford it, is bringing an oaf, a chatos ha'oaf, as a korban. Why? I mean, obviously, it's not just because she's impoverished or she's incapable. There must be some kind of hashkafa behind it. So what tack is the hashkafa? So he goes on to say as follows, v'fisha karbono k'di Rebbe Shimon. Why does a woman who's the yoledes bring a korban to begin with? Right? Especially, why does she bring a korban chatos? Korban chatos implies that you sinned. I mean, childbirth is the most amazing thing. There's no sin associated with childbirth. Why would you bring a korban chatos as a reaction to childbirth? So the Gemara Nida quotes Rav Shimon as follows, and Rashi brings it over here. I think Rashi brings it. Rashi doesn't bring it. Okay, so Rashi brought it. Rashi doesn't bring it. Right. So, but the Gemara mentions, "Kid Reb Shimon shebishashi oledes umitztaeres." When the woman is, you know, actually giving birth, she's in the midst of delivery. She's having a very hard time of it. Nishvas shlo tizokek lebailo. she swears in her desperation that she's never going to go back and be intimate with her husband again. Look what trouble it brought upon her. You know, she was intimate with her husband. It brought her this whole sorrow of childbirth. She swears that she's not going to go back to her husband. And of course, she doesn't really mean it. It's something that she calls out in her pain and desperation. But says Reb Shimon, but you know, it's a sin. It's a chet. I mean, she swore falsely, and to be mechaper for that false oath which she took, even though again it was under, you know, it was understandable, it was under extenuating circumstances, but nonetheless, that's, says Reb Shimon, that's why she has to bring a korban chatas. Okay, so we understand why she has to bring a korban chatas, but why does it have to be a bird? So Zoktim HaShachachim as follows, L'chein Mavir Yonah L'chatas. That's why she davka brings a pigeon or a dove as a korban chatas. She'eina Manachas Ben Zuga Ve'eina Nizkekes El Ben Zuga. The Gemara in Erevin says we can learn fidelity from the dove. The dove never abandons its mate, and it always goes back and returns to its mate. So the very idea of bringing the pigeon or the dove relates to the very chatos. It relates to the very same issue which she has to bring the chatos for. She's bringing the chatos, says Reb Shimon, because she swears in her anguish, ah, I'll never go back to that husband of mine again. We make her bring a korban chatos, and we make her bring a korban chatos from a bird, which davka, you know, is very devoted and loyal to its mate. She should learn from the Yonah, she should learn from the Tzar, you know, that she should maintain the relationship with her husband, despite the quote unquote the pain that it entails, you know, which is brought about from childbirth. Right? So that's very fascinating interpretation. That's why the chatos is the bird, is the Yonah or the Tzar. What about the Ola? Right? Now let's focus on the other carbon for a moment, the carbon Ola, which she brings. The role of the Ola, it would seem, is as follows. For all of these days, until she brings the Karban, she's not allowed to come back into the Beis HaMikdash. Because Bo'a El HaKodesh, Uvitoda Lishmo Yisparach Al Asher Shavu Le'isono. Now she's able to resume coming back to the Beis HaMikdash, right? And she's coming back for the first time, right? This whole time since the childbirth, she wasn't able to even walk in to the Beis HaMikdash. Lo Yeirah Fanav Reikam. So just as we find by the Shlosh Regalim that there's a carbon that you have to bring, you can't just come up to the Beis HaMikdash without bringing a present. You know, you have to present the present when you come to the Beis HaMikdash to the Ribbono Shlom. Lo Yeirah Fanav Reikam. So too, this Isha Yoledes has to present something on the occasion of her being able to come back to the Beis HaMikdash. For who can carbon re'iyah? It's, in a sense, it's equivalent to the carbon re'iyah, the carbon that men would bring when they were ole regel three times a year, you know, to signify the fact that they're coming up before the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? And then he writes as follows, and again, this is, we saw that he was apparently very fond of Ibn Gabiro, you know, the medieval poet. He quoted him before in a previous Meshech Chachma. So here too again, Matsasi Remez al Zebi Asaras Ben Gabiro, Shlomo Ben Gabiro, Osamichei, right? When Ibn Gabiro writes of the various different mitzvahs, he writes that the Taharas Hatuma, right? When the woman is Metahe herself from her Tumas Yoledes, it's through Karbon Hanire, the Karbon Chata'a. Through the carbon of being seen and the carbon chatos. So says the Meshech Chachma, the kara leha'ola carbon hanire, u'kemoshe kosavti. Isn't it striking, says the Meshech Chachma, how Ibn Gabirol in his poetry calls this carbon ola a quote unquote carbon hanire. The word itself is almost like carbon re'iyah. It's a carbon on the occasion of being reunited with the Beis HaMikdash. Right, so that's the role of the carbon ola. It's kind of like the same kind of carbon that one would bring when coming up to the Beis HaMikdash on a regel. And Ibn Gabirol hints at that in his calling it a carbon hanira.
But until the re'iyah is completely consumed, completely burned.
So is this? It's a carbon ola.
It's carbon ola.
No. Again, just in the psukim, right? Uvim losi me tahara tavi keves ben shnasa la ola. Right. That's the carbon re'iyah, so to speak. Uven Yona Osar L'chatos. The bird is brought as a carbon chatos to be mechaper for the fact that she wanted to sever, you know, again, even momentarily, she wanted to sever the relationship with her husband. So the carbon chatos is mechaper for that and uses the imagery of the dove to stress the fidelity of her relationship with her husband. And the carbon ola is like the carbon re'iyah. It signifies the rekindling of that ability to come before the Beis HaMikdash.
And the carbon re'iyah, when they brought it on the regular,
was the carbon ola also. Right, the carbon chagiga was the shlamim, right? But the carbon re'iyah was an ola, right? So in other words, it fits perfectly, you know, with the model that we have.
So we see then the carbon re'iyah, the carbon chagiga, and the shlamim.
No. So the shlamim are the chagiga. It's kind of half. It's the same thing. The chagiga is the shlamim, right? So the truth is, the Meshech Chachma is a fascinating Meshech Chachma on both counts. You know, the role of the Chatas and the role of the Ola. One thing which I think the Meshech Chachma probably thought, because I think it's an obvious Ha'ara, but you know, we'll just speak it out because it doesn't quite speak it out. There's actually a tremendous parallelism between the way he explains the Chatas and the way he explains the Ola. Now, this woman who's a Yoledis has just suffered distancing in two relationships. You know, her relationship with her husband has been strained, and her relationship with the Mikdash, with the Ribono Shel Olam, has been strained. So the Karban Chatas serves to rekindle her relationship with her husband. The Karban Ola serves to rekindle her relationship with the Mikdash, and by extension, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So again, he doesn't explicitly make that point, but I mean, it's such an obvious next step from what he says that probably that's what he meant, and he thought that that's so poshish, I mean, everyone's going to understand that, I don't even have to speak that out. But there's a tremendous fascinating parallelism between the Chatos and the Ola themselves. They really accomplish the same thing. Al Derech Musar, I mean, again, you know, it's not really the Meshech Chachma is talking about directly, but, you know, again, I'm a pulpit rabbi, so I get paid to, you know, to give over these kinds of Musarim. Again, you know, if anyone ever deals with a woman who's just given birth, there's a tremendous psychological sense of distancing, you know, and sometimes even depression, which can come about, you know, after the, you know, after giving birth, you know, postpartum depression. And, you know, again, it's a tremendous important thing to be aware of and to try to address on some level. One might suggest, again, maybe it's being overly psychological over here, but one might suggest that, according to Meshech Chachma, the Torah, in a sense, is addressing different aspects of the postpartum, either depression or distancing. The woman, after childbirth, feels a strain on her relationship with her husband, and she feels a strain on her relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, or with the Beis HaMikdash. Come these two karbonos and address them, and say, no, come back to your husband, come back to the Beis HaMikdash. Similarly, one musar that we should draw from this, even not in the realm of karbanos, is how important it is to deal with women who have just given birth, to do whatever we can to alleviate that sense of distance and tension and stress, you know, that they may feel both in their marital life as well as in their religious life, you know, being distanced both from their husbands and from the mikdash, you know, the mikdash ma'at, from the community, from davening, from shul, you know, whatever it happens to be. Okay, so that's a very fascinating insight in terms of Tumas Yoledes. Let's move on to what the major discussion here in the parsha is about, namely about Tumas Negoim, the halachos of Tzoras, and how to deal with Tzoras. Right, so on page Resh Tesvav, the bottom left of the page, he quotes the pasuk. The beginning of Perek Yud Gimel talks about Negoim. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe vel Aaron leimar. Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron, saying, Adam, ki ever or b'soros seisa sapachas uvaheres. When a person has on his skin one of these afflictions, v'hayo be'or b'soro l'negad soroas, right, and it seems to be an affliction of soras. V'huval Aaron Hakohen, the man should be brought to Aaron Hakohen, o'el achan mibonav hakahanim, or he should be brought to one of his children, the Kohanim. So, comments the Meshech Chachma. Inyan ha-negoyim, shenimsiru le'aron ha-kohen, whom is sisrei ha-torah, asher ha-tumo v'ha-taro toli v'kohen. You know, it's a funny thing, and ultimately one of the secrets of Torah, which we're not going to be able to fully understand, But the fact that the laws of Tzaras were given over to Kohanim, you know, to deal with, is not immediately obvious or self-evident. Kohanim are involved with Karbanos, right? They're involved in the Avod of Hashem in the Mishkan and later the Beis HaMikdash. Kohanim are not doctors, right? Kohanim are not Tumah V'Tara experts per se. L'chara, you know, a guy who learned in a Taharas Kailo would be in a much better position to know about Taharas, you know, about Saras, than a Kohen. I mean, what makes him an expert just because he's a Kohen? So why did the Torah give over the whole Pasha of Saras to Kohanim? Kohanim, again, they're involved in the Avodah Beis HaMikdash. Saras really has nothing to do directly with the Beis HaMikdash. Determining whether it's Tomei or Tahor, you know, shouldn't you know, you wouldn't think offhand that it should be the role of the Kohen necessarily to get involved.
But aren't Kohen supposed to be the Talmid HaChachamim?
Right, so that
they have a role of teaching.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that might be one answer. One might say, well, you know, Kohanim are really being involved over here in their teaching role, not in their religious functionary role. Right? We know that Kisiv Se Kohen Yish Modas, the story of action feels, so Kohanim is supposed to be Talmidei Chachamim, you know, and therefore it's appropriate that they get involved in these things. True, but, you know, I think the Meshech Chacham might say back, but that doesn't always work in practice, meaning you can have a Kohen Am Haaretz. I mean, the Gemara's describe how, you know, a Kohen might go out to check somebody for Saras, and this Kohen, you know, wouldn't know Saras if it came and hit him over the head, so he brings his friend, the Kol Yunga Man from the Taharas Kailo, with him, you know, and the Taharas expert whispers in his ear, it's Tomei, it's Tar, right? But it's up to the Kohen in Halacha to actually pronounce the nega as being Tomei or Tahar. You know, he doesn't know what he's saying. You know, just feed me the words. Tell me what to say. But, you know, Alpi Halacha, we need that Kohen to say the words. Right? So wouldn't it have been on a certain level easier for the Torah just to say, let the Talmid HaChacham, whoever they happen to be the ones who are going to pass in the Shailas with regard to Tumas Saras? What if the Kohen said Amar is Gomor? So, but he can proclaim it to be Tomei or Tahar, you know, irrespective of what he actually knows.
But since the Kohen is involved in Kushim, then he should also be involved in purification of this to become Kushim.
Okay, maybe, but that's not obvious. In other words, Kushim and Taharas, right, the two Starim and Mishnayos, right, and those, they're linked, but they're not exactly the same thing. But he does make the following observation. L'chein omer perakamad esvachem d'shchitas para psula bizar. But there is a parallelism, he writes, between the Kohen's involvement in Saras and the Kohen's involvement in para aduma. Gemara esvachem learns out that the shchita of the para aduma has to be done davka by a Kohen. Right? The pasuk that we just learned at Leah Shabbos talks about how Elazar HaKohen is the one who shechs the para aduma. A non-Kohen can't shech the para aduma. So the Gemara says, Mishum de para kashev et akabayis lo kashem is be'achu. Omer Rav Shisha b'reidu Rav Izi midi dahavi amaris negoyim de lav avoda hi ubayi kahuna. The Gemara says, wait a minute. Why should the para aduma need to be shechted by a Kohen? A carbon doesn't have to be shechted by a Kohen. Shechita k'shera bizar. The halacha is that the Yisrael can go and shecht a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. So I don't understand. A carbon in the Beis HaMikdash doesn't need to be shechted by a Kohen, and the Parah Aduma does have to be shechted by a Kohen. So the Gemara says, well, you know, the Parah is not Kodshem Mizbeach. It's not actually a carbon. It's Kodshem Berek Habayis. It's holy, but it's not holy of the type that's going to be on the Mizbeach. So, okay, so that's an argument that it should be less strict than Karbanos. So explains the Gemara there in Zvachim, midi dahavi amaris negoim. We compare the shchit of the para aduma to the involvement of the Kohen in negoim, in Saras, right? The lav avoda hu by kahuna, just as Saras is not navoda at all, and it requires the involvement of the Kohen, so too, bedavka, because para aduma is not navoda, it's not part of the service in the Beis HaMikdash, davka, because of that, that's why it requires a Kohen. Why? So what he's getting at is that you see, the Gemara is saying, you see from Negoim that the Kohen actually has a double role. The Kohen's role is to be involved in Seder Kodshim, but the Kohen's role is also to be involved in Seder Taharis, as we see by Tzoras. And just as we see the Kohen is involved by Tzoras, by extension, it makes sense that he should be involved exclusively by Parah Aduma, because Parah Aduma, I mean, after all, Maseches Parah, right, is in Taharis, right? I mean, ultimately, it's a function of Tumah Vitara and not a function of Kodshim. The Chen Parah, I'm sorry, the Horulon Hishtavus, the Maris Negoim Ton Eitz Eres Ve'ezo Vitarasa, the Chen Parah Aduma, the Hemashem Inyan Tahara Vitumah, the Nimsu Lakoi Lomitsat Avoda, the Shem Bachutz. If you think about it, says the Meshech Chochma, there are actually a lot of parallels between Tzoras and Parah Aduma. First of all, both of them are Bachutz. Both of them are outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Everything involved with the Parah Aduma takes place outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and Tzoras obviously so. They're both involved in Tumah V'Tahara. Parah Aduma is used in being the Tahara person from Tumas Meis. And look at this. I mean, he draws a fascinating parallelism. He says, look at some of the things that are involved in both cases. Eitz Erez, cedar, Ve'ezov, right, and hyssop. Right, when in Parshas Mitzora, when we read about the Tahara of the Mitzora, the Eitz Erez and the Ezov are going to be used, right, symbolic of the fact, say Chazal, that even the mightiest person, like an Eitz Erez, is brought down low, has to be humble, like an Ezov, like a lowly hyssop, right? So that idea of those ingredients are used both in the preparation of the Mechatos, by the Parah Aduma, as well as in Taharas Mitzora. So whatever it signifies exactly, that commonality of ingredients signifies that there's some kind of linkage between Parah Aduma and Tzoras. Just as the Kohen is involved exclusively in the realm of Tzoras, the Kohen should be involved exclusively in Parah Aduma. Now, he just mentions this as an aside, you know, to talk about how the Kohen's involvement in Tzoras is a whole different realm of the Kohen's role. You know, the Kohen is not just a Kodshim man, he's also a Taharas man, you know, so to speak, as we see in Tzoras and Parah Aduma. He never really comes back after this point, as far as I understand the Meshech Chochma, to explore the deeper connection between Tzoras and Parah Aduma. I mean, he raises a number of parallelisms, you know, the idea of the Eitz Erez and the Ezov is a fascinating one. You know, the fact that there's this parallelism in terms of how both of them are supposed to convey the idea of humility, but he never really comes back to explore them. Perhaps, again, this is me, this is not the Meshech Chochma, but perhaps one might suggest that Tzoras and Parah Aduma are both involved in a certain level, not just on Tahara, but also Kapara from Chet. There's also an element of atonement which is involved in both of them. Tzoras, as we know, is associated with Chet. In other words, the way Chazal understands Tzoras is not just, oh well, you went out without your galoshes, you know, in the wet rain, so you caught a really bad skin disease, you know, as a result. No, Tzoras, according to Chazal, is the result of a person having done terrible, terrible averos. Right? Parah Aduma also. I mean, Tumas Meis is not the result of Averos, but as we spoke about actually in Parshas Parah, Parah Aduma is Mechaper for the Chet HaEgel. You know, it has an element of Kapara in the thought of Chazal, you know, national Kapara. You know, so maybe it makes sense for the Kohen to be involved in both of those things, because the Kohen has the role of as being Mechaper. The Kohen brings Karbonos to help him Mechaper for Klal Yisrael, and the Kohen is involved in those aspects of Tumah V'Tahara that have a Kapara element to them. And that's why Dafka Parah Aduma and Tumah Tzoras, you know, have these parallelisms that link the two of them. That's me, that's not the Meshech Chochma. So if you don't like it, you can, it's okay, all right. We'll say that for the tape, it's okay. But it's Muskim and Abezdin here in the Al-Star for sure. But, you know, again, that he doesn't make that point.
They're related to Mitzvah.
They're both related to Misa. Right. Well, Mitzorah is Nechshav Kemes. Right, so right, 100%. You know, so a Mitzorah is Choshev Kemes. Mace is Choshev Kemes, right? And that's the Kotzker said, right? The gematria of Chet is also Chet, right? So, you know, there's a parallelism on that level as well, you know, that there's a connection in terms of Misa, of dying, and, you know, in a sense, being reborn again. The Meshech Chochma himself offers the following explanation, a very fascinating explanation again, why the Kohen Davka should be involved in Tumah V'Tahara, in Tumah Saras. On the Mnish Lomar, maybe you can suggest as follows. Dinei HaNegoyim Hin Machlo HaMistabekes. Right? Ad Omer B'Medrash Rabba V'Talmud In Ksubis Delo Aylo L'Mavue. Right? We have reference to the fact that Saras is something which is contagious. You know, Saras is something which is spreading. Right? You shouldn't go into
physical contact by flesh and earth.
Right, but you know, he quotes Midrashim and Gemaras that you know you shouldn't walk within the area of the tsaras of the mitzora. I mean, the truth is that's the poshut of shat of the chumash, right? Yichutz la'machan ayesher. If he goes outside of the camp, he calls to recover himself. Tomei yikra, right? As he calls that, I'm tomei. Right. The simple shat in all of that is that there's a certain contagious element to tsaras. Right, it's interesting, Shamshon Rafael Hirsch in his commentary on the Chumash, it's a very long explanation on Pashas Tazria, where he argues against the common the common belief that Saras is leprosy. Right? If you look in most English translations of the Chumash, they say Saras is leprosy. So Rav Hirsch says, nothing doing, it's absolutely wrong to say that Saras is leprosy. And he goes and brings a whole bunch of proofs that even just reading the Chumash, the symptoms of Tsaras do not correspond to the symptoms of leprosy. He quotes from the Royal British Academy of Medicine, right? And he writes, among other things, that leprosy is not contagious, right? You know, again, Baruch Hashem, nowadays we don't really have leprosy, but in the third world, you know, they still have occasions. Recently, Ethiopia, for places like this, you know, there still are occasions of real leprosy. And Rahman al-Islam is a terrible, terrible disease, but it's not contagious, right? And says Rav Hirsch, you know, it's very clear from the Psukim and Chumash that the Chumash seems to treat leprosy, Tsaras, as a potentially contagious disease. That's why the guy goes outside of the camp. Again, leaving aside, you know, Mesorah, Mosi Shemra, and all of that, but I'm just reading the Pashat of Shat and the Psukim. It seems like we're dealing with a contagious disease, an infectious disease, and that doesn't fit the description of what leprosy is, because, you know, again, it's a Beferish, you know, Royal British Academy of Medicine, that leprosy is not contagious, right? So he, again, the Meshech Chochma is not making reference to that Royal Academy of Medicine, although you never know, he might have known that, but he says, we do find... I'm sorry?
They used to feel that leprosy was contagious.
That's what he quotes. You can take a look in Rav Hirsch, but he writes, you know, the leprosy. It's not extremely contagious. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the impression you have from Chumash is talking about something which is contagious enough that you would send the person outside of the camp, and you would cause midrashim like that. Since dealing with saras is so contagious, again, as you mentioned a moment ago, so dealing with mitzaraim is risky business. It's like, you know, the brave souls in Japan who are going into a nuclear reactor and, you know, exposing themselves to radiation, you know, for the benefit of the cloud. And you need incredible hashkocha to get involved with these mitzaroim, because the very exposure, Rahman al-Islam, could kill the person. You know, chas v'sholom, you don't want being involved in the tsaras for the tsaras to be catching. That's why the Torah chooses the Kohanim to be involved with Saras. There is no intrinsic connection between Saras and being a Kohen. But you know what a Kohen has? A Kohen has super duper Hashkacha. When God sets aside the Kohanim to be his special group, right? Part one of the advantages of being a member of the Kohen Club is you get special Hashkacha Pratis. Yeah, it's not like that, right? But you have special hashgacha practice as a kohen. So therefore, what better person to send to work with these contagious mitzaraim than people who already have hashgacha practice that they're especially watched over by the Ribbono Shel Olam? Right? It says in Divrei Hayomim that Aaron was separated to be holy of holies. Now again, we normally understand that pasuk to mean he was set aside for a special task. But the Meshech Chachma, fascinatingly, I mean, it's a fascinating insight into Kohanim, right? The separation of Kohanim speaks to their being invested with extra Hashgacha Pratis above and beyond the norm, right? I mean, I don't know that he would say this, but it almost sounds like if you plan to go on some dangerous journey somewhere, take a Kohen. Take a Kohen with you, right? I mean, he doesn't say that. I mean, I'm not sure that he would say that halach l'maisa, or even that he suggests that. But it sounds like, you know, I mean, you're going in a place that's a little dangerous. Take a kohen, you know, because kohanim are blessed with special hashgacha practice.
Excuse me. When you talk about life threatening, it's life threatening to someone who has tzaras. He's in a life threatening situation.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, in the Meshech Chachma. Meshech Chachma is saying, since Tzaras is contagious, and we're asking people to come near this Mitzorah and to analyze it, and to, you know, to paskin on the quality of Tzaras, so the person who's going to be exposed to the Tzaras is going to, you know, open himself up to catching this disease. Right? So we want to send people.
I didn't even know it was, what I'm saying is, I didn't know if it was life threatening.
Doesn't say the person that had it.
Let's say it's not life threatening, but it's contagious. You know, in other words,
Kohen has an immunity.
Right. There's a special gene for immunity in the Kohanim, and that's what he's suggesting. Now, again, this would be fascinating. I don't know if there's any research on this. We know there's a lot of research on the Kohen gene. You know, that's been discussed in recent years, the fact that Kohanim can be identified by their DNA, right? It would be fascinating. I don't know if there's any research to support this whatsoever, but it would be absolutely fascinating if in addition to having a Kohen gene, that there was some kind of genetic immunity to anything that attached itself to that kind of gene. Again, that's really out there, but it would be fascinating if there was such a thing. Yeah.
As being a Kohen, somehow I do feel, I'm not arrogating into myself, but I feel I do have some special benefits.
Okay.
As a Kohen.
So stick with us. We'll all go places. Yeah. So again, a fascinating idea. Even if you're not so convinced with regard to the Kohanim of Malvin and Tzaras, in other words, that's the reason for the Kohanim of Malvin and Tzaras. You know, the only reason the Kohanim are involved in Tzaras is because they're less susceptible to the contagious Tzaras disease. Okay, even if you're not into that, but the Meshech Chachma's idea is still fascinating in terms of Kohanim in general. The notion that a Kohen has extra Hashgacha Pratis above and beyond that which a regular Jew has is a fascinating concept in Hashgacha, which he wants to relate to ultimately to the pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. I want to take a look at on page Resh Tes Zayin again, just going on with some of these laws about Tzaras. The second paragraph on Resh Tes Zayin, V'ra HaKohen Es HaNega, right? The next pasuk in Yud Gimel, the Kohen is called in to take a look at this potential Nega Tzaras. And the pasuk says, Yud Gimel Gimel, V'ra HaKohen Es HaNega Be'or HaBosar. The Kohen sees the affliction in the skin, right? The Seyar Bonega Hafach Lavon, right? The hair in the affliction has turned white. Umari Hanega Omok Me'or Besaro. The appearance of the affliction is deeper than the skin. Negav Sarasu, then it's a Negav Saras, then it's an affliction of Saras. V'ra'ohu HaKohen V'timeyoso. And the Kohen will see him and be metame him, right? And declare him to be tame. So the Meshech Chachma points out that the word vira'o, the verb vira'o in some form, is used twice in this pasuk, and it seems extraneous. Hakfelus mavur, right? It talks about the Kohen seeing the negat twice, right? Vira'o hakohen es hanega, vira'ohu hakohen v'timei oso. Right, one of those vira'os should be eliminated. Right, vira'o hakohen es hanega, da 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 da, nega sarasu, v'timei oso. Right, v'timei oso hakohen. Why do you have to say vira'ohu twice? Right. So says the Meshech Chachma. This is a beautiful classic Meshech Chachma because he uses this question, which is the question of Pashut Pshat, to explain a halacha that Chazal actually get from somewhere else. Right? But he says, as much as Chazal dashes it from another pasuk, you can see it in this pasuk as well. Again, a classic example where Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebaal Peh really mesh together beautifully if you just know how to read properly.
Is it possible that the first time he says Rami, he just physically sees it?
Yeah.
And the second time he sees it with his insight?
Oh, very good. So let's take that idea. There's seeing and there's evaluating, right? To be roeh can mean both, right? In other words, roeh can be physical seeing and shatzing it up, you know, evaluating something, insight into it. Right. So let's take all that and read into the Meshech Chachma for a minute. You talking al derech razal shakavon shira sanega yivi reuya l'tama, right? You know, Chazal tell us that even when something is a negat sara'as, one should not always be metame it. Right? The first re'iyah that the Kohen does just has to be a physical analysis. Does it have the white hairs which would render this a negav saras? That's the first level of ra'ah. Let him not analyze, let him examine. Right? So he examines it, he sees it, and he sees, okay, you know, check, this seems to be tame. Oh, but then there's a second level of re'iyah. V'ra'ol hakoin. The second time it says ra'ol in the pasuk, hu shiyir hakoin al ha'ish in roi l'tumasa. Even if it's a negav saras, but maybe I shouldn't be metame this guy. What do you mean? Hu imchasa nosin lo ko zayin yimei hamishta. V'chein b'regel nosin lo ko yimos ha'regel shalo arbev simchasa u'drochei darchei noah. Now Chazal tell us that a Kohen shouldn't always proclaim a negat saras to be saras, even if, you know, it meets the criteria of saras. For instance, a guy's in Sheva Brachas, right? He's a chasam. And all of a sudden, he wakes up one morning and says, oh, that's a funny little skin rash that I have. Oy vey. Right? So Chazal say, you know, a Kohen shouldn't be metame a chasson, you know, during Sheva Brachos, you know, wait till the last Sheva Brachos, you go over to him and say, okay, can we step outside now, you know, and then, you know, lay it on him, you know, after the Sheva Brachos, why should he share his simcha, right? What's that? Right, so it's interesting. So actually, obviously we're not so concerned about the contagious aspect of things. Step outside and keep going. Keep walking all the way in the other direction. Right? But again, but that's a halacha that we have. In other words, we have a halacha that one is not supposed to be metame a chasam during his Sheva Brachos. And similarly, Berego, a guy is, you know, the Mr. Cholamite Pesach, and he's running here, he's running there, you know. I don't know, it could be with all the running around, maybe he wouldn't mind being a Mitzora, you know, for the rest of Chol HaMoed, right? But that halacha is, since being a Mitzora is going to share his Simchas HaRegel, it's going to share his Simchas Yontas, so we say, you know, okay, you have a Shaila, okay, come back in a few days, you know, after Yisru Chag, and, you know, the Kohen will paskin on it then.
It's the same thing with Shchita. Well, it has to go into Pascha, it's trade, but not trade. You can find the heter.
Right, but here it's even more than that. It's not just finding a heter, it's that the Kohen looks at it and says, oh, that's going to be a problem. Don't ask me that question. Come back in 5 days and we'll deal with it then. Right, you know, so in other words, the Kohen, you know, the Kohen will not even be misyachis to the saras during this time, right, because paskening tame will make it tame. And we'll share the guy's simcha. I mean, mashallah ma'adavadavad. The closest thing I think you have to this, because man is there, is the halacha that, you know what, sometimes when a person, Rahman al-Islam, loses a relative, sometimes you don't tell the person, you know, of the p'tira, again, under certain circumstances, because once the person knows about the p'tira, they're going to have to sit shiva and follow all those halachas. And in certain cases, that's going to be a strain on the person, like an elderly person, you know, who's going to have a hard time sitting shiva and the like. So you know what? Under certain circumstances, you don't tell the person right away. You wait till after the shloshim, when the person can just sit shiva for an hour, you know, and be done with it. And, you know, in a certain sense, what you don't know won't hurt you. Again, you know, when to do that is complicated. It's not a decision to be made lightly, but there is at least such a concept out there. In other words, until you know, you don't have to keep the halacha. So until the Kohen says Tameh, it's not Tameh. Between you and me, the Kohen looks at it and says, look, I know that it's Tameh. All right, but it calls him out that he didn't say anything. It's not Tameh. And the chassan can enjoy his shaved brachas. The fellow can enjoy his simchas yamtiv, right? In other words, why share all of that if unnecessary? That's the right. Darachel, darachei noam, the ways of the Torah pleasantness. You know, even when you have tzaras, but you know, wait till an opportune time to do it. V'lochem v'ra'ahu eichu ve'ichusto. So therefore, the second ra'ahu in the pasuk is again not just to examine it, but to evaluate it. What's the echos? What's the nature of this person? Him who royal if he has man letumasa. Is this person in the right time that he should be rendered tameh? Right? So first examine, but then evaluate. You know, it's a different type of re'iyah, which is taking place in the second half of the pasuk. Now, by the way, the Meshech Chachma doesn't tell you, but he seems to be weighing in on a machlokes tanoim, right? Does machlokes tanoim, should the Kohen even bother looking at Negoim during a guy's shaver brachas or during Chol HaMoed? Right? Now, the chassan calls over the Kohen, I have a skin rash. Oh no, I'm not. Don't show me. I don't want to know. I don't want to hear from it. You know, here's my number. Here's my card. Here's my email. You know, you'll get in touch with me in 5 days, and then you know we'll worry about it. Because one opinion in tanoim holds, you know, once the Kohen looks, he's mechuyev to render a psak, and if the psak is going to be tameh, he can't. You know, he has to say tameh, right? That would not seem to work very well with the Meshech Chachma's analysis of the pasuk, because in the pasuk, according to the Meshech Chachma, the Kohen is first looking and examining, and then making a determination whether it's kedai to be metame. I mean, the Meshech Chachma seems to be working with the other opinion in Tanoim that no, you know, you're allowed to look. And you know, you can choose to say it's tahar, so at least in that way, you know, he saved the chassan some agmas nefesh. And if he takes a look and says tameh, he has the right to say, call me back later, right?
Why would any chassan believe what the Kohen tells him in the week of Shevet Brachos? Because everyone gets the same answer.
Well,
everyone gets the same answer that it's tahar. Mm-hmm.
No. The Kohen can't say tahar if it's really tameh.
But what I'm saying, if he can't say tameh,
right,
through the week of Shevet Brachos,
right,
so then what's the point of going? I mean,
no, he can't say tahar if it's tameh. In other words, he would get one of two answers. Either it's tahar,
okay,
or come back. Now, come back means... come back means it's tameh. In other words, everyone's going to understand that. But what it means is, halachically, he doesn't have to treat himself as a mitzvah until he comes back after Yom Tov.
So why does he even have to come during the week of Shevet Brachos? The Maisa, it's the same.
Well,
maybe not the same answer, but the same result for the week of Shevet Brachos.
Well, no, but another way, right, for the week of Shevet Brachos, but at least the Chassan will have the Yishuv Hadas if the answer is Tahar. So then at least he has the, you know, if it's come back at the end of Shevet Brachos, so basically he'll be sitting for the rest of Shevet Brachos thinking, okay, I guess I'm not going back to work, you know, right after Shevet Brachos, you know, we have another couple of things to take care of. At least if it's Tahar, so there's the Yishuv Hadas, you know, the Chassan doesn't have to worry, I got it off his my head, and I know that it's not considered to be a problem. Right, so you know that I guess you know from the Chassan's point of view, you know sometimes ain't simcha kataras hasveikus. You know, there's no simcha like answering up questions. He'd rather have it answered, you know, than to have it dangling over his head that he doesn't know, you know, what's going to be. But again, Meshech Chachma's reading of the pasuk seems to be, you know, working with that interpretation that it is the Kohen's right to look at it and then decide to just tell the guy, oh, I'll come, you know, come back later. And we'll talk about it then. Yeah.
This sounds like the Meshech Chachma is interpreting the halacha from the pasuk, like he's dashing the pasuk.
He is. Right.
Don't you have to be like to dash in the pasuk like halacha?
No, no. So again, what is Meshech Chachma doing? Meshech Chachma is not making up the halacha. The halacha is the halacha. Right,
Meshech Chachma.
Right now, he's saying that we can see it in this pasuk. Now the truth is, so where is the Gemara darshan it from? So the Meshech Chochma goes on to say, Zer she'omar uviyom he'ra'os, yeshiyom she'iyato roe. Right, the pasuk says later on, uviyom he'ra'os bo basar chayitma, on the day on which raw skin is seen on the mitzora, he should be tamei. So the Gemara dashes, Gemara Ma'ikatam, that instead, it could have just said, uveheira osbo basar chayitma, when you see raw skin on the mitzora, it's a sign of tumah. Instead it says, uviyom, on the day on which you see it. So says the Gemara, yesh yomim sha'ato roeh, yesh yomim sha'iyato roeh. There's some days where the Kohen should look at the tzaras and, you know, do his job, and there's some days where the Kohen should say, sorry, I can't look at it now, right? And those days, says the Gemara, are like a chasen during Sheva Brachas, you know, a person during the regal and whatnot. So the Gemara, you know, has this halacha. You know, again, Meshech Chochma didn't make up the halacha. The Gemara has this halacha, but the Gemara darshens it from a different pasuk. So now the obvious question is, if you can darshen it from here, so how come the Gemara darshens it from over there, right? That was, you know, why did the Gemara do what the Meshech Chochma did? So the Meshech Chochma says, nah. Who in your mitzad hazman? Lo she'im lefit chunos of sarchis chagos im anoshim chayosei bo.
All that pasuk tells you is that there are some zmanim which are mesugo for the kohen checking the goyim, and some zmanim which are not so mesugo for checking the goyim. Now, if you just had that pasuk of Yom Heiros Bo, you wouldn't necessarily know that the good zman versus the bad zman has something to do with the stage in life that the person is in. Meaning, you might have said, well, a good zman, a bad zman for checking the goyim is the regel. A bad zman for checking the goyim, I'm sorry, a bad zman for checking the goyim is the regel, is yontav or chol hamoed. A good zman is any other time, right? You might have said that. In other words, the distinction between yontav chol hamoed and non-yontav chol hamoed is one which is purely calendar-based. But in the case of the chasen and sheva brachas, it's not so much a calendar issue, it's a personal issue. Meaning, you know, it's unique to this person. So that you wouldn't have necessarily gotten from Uviyom Heiraos. What? How does the Gemara know to extend the distinction between regel non regel to chasam to chasam versus non chasam? You know, the two cases not exactly parallel. So says the Meshech Chochma. Even though the Gemara doesn't say it, what's implicit in the Gemara is once the Gemara quoted Uviyom Heiraos Bo. The Gemara was also thinking about my pasuk, says the Meshech Chochma, v'ra'ahu, the double re'iya, which extends the idea of regel versus non-regel to, you know, chasen versus non-chasen, that sometimes you have to evaluate the person's unique life experiences and where he's holding in life, as opposed to just a blanket rule, like, you know, adyantiv, you know, you're not allowed to check negoyim, whereas, you know, not on Yontif, you are allowed to check Nagoyim. So, what the Meshech Chochma was doing, and again, it's such a unique idea that he has, basically he's saying, although the Gemara didn't quote my Pasuk, the Gemara really needs my Pasuk in order to get to the Drasha, which the Gemara learned out from another Pasuk. Right? Now, again, that's still a pretty bold thing to say, you know? I'm telling you the Pasuk that the Gemara didn't quote, you know, which the Gemara really had in mind, even though the Gemara never said it. Right? Okay, but the truth is it's a very fascinating way of reading the pasuk. You know, the two re'iyos, you know, do very much zero in on that particular idea. Take a short cute vort from the Meshech Chochma. Right? So Yud Gimel Lamed Gimel. Right? Later on in that same perek, when a person has, a man or a woman, has a negat saras on the head, you know, in the hair area, or for the case of a man, in the beard, right? So it describes what the halacha is, right? Saras of the scalp or of the beard. So it says in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, v'hiskaloch, the mitzora should shave, v'yeshanesek lo yigaleach, but the area where the affliction is found, he should not shave. Now, if you look in the Chumash, in the word v'hiskaloch, the gimel is written as a big gimel. Why? Because. All right. So, So it says in Meshech Chachma, let me tell you why. V'hiskaloch, Reish Yud Zayin, the top left hand corner of the page. V'hiskaloch Gimel Rabosi, it's a big Gimel. L'rames, Sheshlosh Alavin Yidochim B'tiglachta. It's possible for three lavin, three negative commandments, to be pushed aside by the giluach, by the shaving of the mitzvah. Number one, se'ar zekano, right? The halacha is that a Jewish man is not allowed to use a razor to shave his beard. Nonetheless, the mitzvah shaves his beard even with a razor. So in other words, this is an example of asei docha lo sasei. In other words, the mitzvah of the hiskaloch pushes aside the issur of using a razor to shave his beard. For Akimu Kohen, the Ksiv Bo Lavi Yaseiro, the Allah, you know, the Torah writes an extra lav by a Kohen. If you're a Kohen, you get extra Ashkacha Prophets on the one hand, but on the other hand, if you shave your beard with a razor, so you get two lavin, right? That's, you know, you take the good, you take the bad, you know, you're being a Kohen, you get the whole package. Right, so the Kohen who shaves his beard with a razor gets two lavin. So if this Mitzorah is a Kohen and he's forced to shave his beard as per the Torah's directive, he would get two lavin. V'nozir, let's say, I mean, you know, this guy is really having an interesting identity crisis, right? Let's say you're a Nozir, a person's a Nozir, and in the middle of being a Nozir, he gets Saras. It could happen, why not? So we know the Nozir is not allowed to shave his hair. But as the mitzvah, his davka is supposed to shave his hair. So the mitzvah of the hiskaloch pushes aside the lo sase for the nazir of shaving any part of his body and certainly his beard. Hare gimel, or in the case of his hair, right? In the case where he has a nesek in the hair. Hare gimel lavin kulam docha osan tiglachto du mitzvah. Right, so here there are, you know, basically the Torah is being meramis to the fact that there are three potential lo sa'aseis that could be pushed aside by this giluach. So it says v'his galoch with a big gimel, and the best thing is the last word the Meshech Chachma says upashut. Come on, this is obvious as to what the big gimel means in this pasuk. Okay, it was obvious to him. I don't know that it's obvious to us, but at least now he shared his wisdom with us, so that when we see this big gimel in the pasuk, the big gimel is telling you the concept of asei docha lo sasei as it applies in three different potential scenarios. You know, when the mitzora is being megaleach, when he's shaving himself. Okay, one last nekuda in the laws of tzaras. The ish ki moreit rosho ish tsaruahu tame. Right, a little bit later on in this parak, in Mem Aleph, it says, V'ish ki moreit vosho, kereachu toharhu. When a person has hair fall out, that's just a sign of baldness. Right? However, v'chiyev akorachas ova gabachas, when a person has in the back of his head, or in the front of his head, nega lavon adam dom, a whitish, reddish affliction, tzaras parachasi, that is a form of tzaras, the karachta or the gabachta, on the back or the front of his head. Right? So he should be declared to be a mitzora. And later on, the Pasuk Mendalut, the Pasuk says, ish tzoruahu, tamehu, a man who is a mitzora, is he? He is tamei. Right? So comes the Meshech Chachma as follows. Ha'inyan, demida b'mida lo batel. To understand this whole pasha, the notion of a person getting saras on the head, you have to understand that that's not by accident. The fact that he got it on his head is mida k'neged mida. Yal kimutz v'tsaras ayin bo nigei batim chayel se bozeh. For instance, Chazal tell us that nigei batim, what we're going to read about later on, the notion that saras afflicts a house is because the person is stingy, and doesn't spend his money on good causes like tzedakah. So his possessions, like his house, which he holds in such big esteem, it's one of these guys, you walk in and you know, chas v'shalom, you should get a little bit of mud. Yeah, chandeliers, no mud on the carpet. You know, don't turn around, don't swivel too quickly. You know, you'll destroy the rug. You know, like, if he's right, you know, if he's so makbid on this and he doesn't give money to tzedakah accordingly, so you know, the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, oh yeah, I'll send saras on your house. And you'll see, you know, what interior decorating is all about. Right, so we see there's a concept of midah keneged midah, not only in the notion of saras, but even the place where the saras strikes. Im hanega barosh, if the guy gets saras on the head, v'vaday hu meshubish b'kar chasecho v'deo zaros, it must point to the fact that there's something wrong with his head, davka. Right, in other words, that he's not, he doesn't think right. You know, there's something wrong with his thoughts. What's that?
Saras should affect his mouth. Is that what he's saying, lashon hara?
Well, it's actually interesting. The Chazal talk about 7 different sins for which the person can get saras. I mean, for us, the most famous example is lashon hara, we linked to saras. But as he's going to say over here, there are other sins which have a connection to saras. And in particular, one sin he's going to say is particularly connected to saras of the head. How so? V'lochein ba'at saras b'karachto makom hamachshava u'mishkan hasecha. Therefore, saras will come on the head, right? The place of machshava where the seichel resides. V'nei machet shalo hu b'midos v'kochas ha'nefesh ha'pu'ulos. If his chet relates to midos, or you know, spiritual qualities, or even activities, kol shalo zayin dvar negoyim boim. Right, the Gemara in Erechin says that there's 7 different things which can bring about saras. Right, so then you know it's not tied to the head necessarily. Lo kein im chet b'koach sichlo she'oz hanega b'rosho. If the sin is relates to something intellectual, so then the nega will strike his head as well. And then he goes on to say umizeh mashabo gasas haruach. Right, one of the things that saras can come about for is gasas ruach, is haughtiness. She'oz hanega b'roch, she'oz hatov hitov b'seichel, u'megi lavod azarok, or she'omer b'roch levarecho v'shachachto v'chulei. Ultimately, haughtiness is an intellectual sin because the person thinks I'm a somebody, right, and it brings the person to avod azarok. Right, so it's ultimately it's the sin of the intellect. Lochein b'uziyah v'sarach zarcho v'mitzchol makom ha'machshava. Therefore, when Uziyah, who was the king, strived to serve as Kohen Gadol and came, you know, into the Beis Hamikdash to serve as the Kohen, it says that he was afflicted with saras b'mitzcha, right? The saras broke out against his forehead. That was the sin of gasas haruach, of haughtiness. He thought that he would ascend to the kahuna in addition to being a melech. So the saras comes and afflicts him in the makom hamachshava, right? The place of thought, you know, to show that intellectually he was skewed. Therefore, who chote because sichlo amiyuchot ba'adam mitzad shu ish she'eno b'shum chay bilti medaber l'chein oma ish tzorua hu tamehu. So therefore, since this particular type of tzoras comes because of haughtiness, because he thinks he's a gadra, he's a somebody, therefore when it stresses in the pasuk that he's a mitzora, it says ish tzorua hu tamehu. He's a man who's a mitzora. He thinks he's a somebody, right? In other words, it's his thinking of himself in great haughty terms, right? Or using his intellect, which you know, in an improper way, which ultimately is the sign of a human being as opposed to an animal. Someone who you know has an intellect and can use the intellect. Ultimately, it's that you know misuse of the intellect which is going to bring him down. Therefore, ish tzoruahu, his manhood, his humanity is stressed under those circumstances to underscore that point. Just one little, I just want to close with, you know, Shabbos HaChodesh. Here's one insight on the Haftarah for Shabbos HaChodesh, which comes from Sefer Yecheskel. It's back at the end of Shmos, on page Kuf Samich Beis, the bottom right-hand column. Talking about the karbanos that are going to be brought in the third Beis HaMikdash, by the Nasi, by the leader of the Jewish people. The pasuk describes how the Nasi will make a carbon ola as a voluntary carbon or a carbon shlomim as a voluntary carbon. But the way it talks about an olas nedava and a shalme nedava is very striking. It says Nedava Ola, Nedava comes first, or Shlomim Nedava. Shlomim comes before Nedava when it comes to Shlomim. Why the reversal? I mean, within a few words of one another, either Olas Nedava Shalme Nedava, or Nedava Ola Nedava Shlomim. Why switch it around? So he says, Hiktim Nedava La Ola, Shamisnadik Ola, Dilma Asil De Takal De Diyimo, Sarach Lahavi Ola Azar, Velikol Shem Ola, Aleha, Kehilo, Psachim Reish Elu Dvarim. When it comes to an Olas Nedava, you want to make sure that you don't misuse the carbon ola before your makrivit. So basically, you would be kare shame. You would declare it to be an ola at the last possible minute. You would bring the animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and basically, right before you're about to hand it over to the Kohen, you would say, this is an ola. So in the case of an ola, nedava comes before ola, meaning your desire to be makrivit precedes the kriyas shem ola, right? Aval b'shlomim she'ein bohem me'ilo mechayim yachol yo shem shlomim kodem yachas nedava l'Hashem. But when it comes to a shlomim, so the halacha is, even if you were kari shem shlomim while the animal was still alive, there won't be me'ila on it. There's only me'ila on it after it's shechted. So there's no harm done if you say this animal is going to be a shlomim. So you might as well call it a shlomim way back at home. And then shlomim nedava, the kriyas shem shlomim, perceives it being a nedava. It's a simple insight. It doesn't really relate to the rest of the haftara, but again, it's a classic, beautiful example how the Meshech Chachmah picked up on even the smallest little minutia of the pasuk and saw tremendous halachos lurking therein.
That's so
mechayim, you know, while the shlomim is still alive. Well, Bez Hashem, we'll pick up next week. Around the same time, 8:30 or so, maybe a drop later, just because Myra will get a little bit later. But again, the shir will be here, and we'll see you Bez Hashem then.